If you want Colts talk all year long, you're in the right place.
Fires it upfield. Caught over the middle. Michael Pittman Jr. There he goes. He's at the 40. He's at the 30. Slips out of a tackle. 20. 10. 5. Touchdown. Michael Pittman Jr. takes it 75 yards to the house.
Big run. Angling left. 40. He's at the 30. Down the near sideline. 20. 50. 10. 5. Touchdown. Jonathan Taylor, a 49-yard gallop to Peter.
In the Indiana Union Construction Industry radio studio, let's get the podcast started.
Welcome in the official Colts podcast. I'm Jeffrey Gorman. Normally sitting here, Ms. Lara Overton, but she is on special assignment today, so we are joined by Casey Valier. And, of course, always our man, J.J. Stankovic, is here, guys. A lot to go over. Michael Pittman Jr., the franchise tag. We're going to get into that. We got Ben Solak coming up from The Ringer, one of the best in the business covering the NFL. And, of course, all three of us were down at the NFL Combine last week, and we got some takeaways. J.J., first and foremost, a huge part of Shane Steichen's offense is Michael Pittman Jr. Colts work today, finally put the franchise tag on him, hopefully with a door or window cracked open for an extension.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those situations where the tag is probably it's just the next step in trying to get a deal done. You know, some teams, when they put a tag on a player, it's to trade them. This does not feel like that. This feels like everything that we heard from Chris Ballard, specifically when he was asked by the great Mike Chappell, will Michael Pittman be on the team in September? And he goes, yes, he will. And then Shane Steichen on Tuesday, we heard from him this morning, and he was just so effusive in his praise of Michael Pittman. Nothing we hadn't heard before, but given the timing of it around the franchise tag decision today, Michael Pittman's going to be on this team in 2024, and you hope he's going to be on this team beyond 2024.
Safe to say he's on the roster right there. Does this affect anything with that extension? Any part of this franchise tag getting a deal done, guys?
I don't think it does. I think both. We heard from Michael Pittman Jr. at the end of the year, him talking about what the franchise tag means, and he also addressed it as it is a tool to help you get a long-term thing done. So I think it seems like, as JJ kind of alluded to, the team and the player are on the same page. This is kind of just, as JJ said, the step you take. I'm not anticipating it being one of those things that gets drawn out into, you know, training camp and all that. You see that all.
So just for real quick on that, the Colts now have until, I believe, it's mid-July.
July, yes, correct.
I don't know the exact date to get a deal done. If you don't get a deal done by then, you play on the tag.
Right. Yep.
There are like these rare cases where a player doesn't sign the tag or a team rescinds the tag.
Right.
Le'Veon Bell didn't sign the tag.
Are you worried about MPJ in this instance at all?
No, because and it's for what Casey said, that at the end of the year when he was asked about the tag, he was pretty clear about, like, it's a tool.
Right.
It's a tool that you can use. Does he like it? Probably not. I don't think any player likes the franchise tag. But it's something that helps you work toward another deal.
Right.
And for the Colts' perspective, you use it because you don't want to risk losing him in free agency. You want zero risk of him going anywhere. There has not been a player have the franchise tag placed on him and then change teams via being signed since Joey Galloway in 2000.
Mm, wow.
That cost the
Joey
Cowboys,
Galloway.
That cost the Cowboys two first-round picks to do that. There has not been a player that is a team has given up two firsts to sign a player on a tag.
How important, guys? I want both answers from you. How important is Michael Pittman Jr., not to this football team, but to the development of Anthony Richardson, that specific player?
I think he's vital. I mean, we got into this conversation of wide receiver one, wide receiver two. What is Michael Pittman? I know for what he means to this offense and to number five, he is the number one option. He is your number because of everything that he brings. He brings all that you want out of a player, not just wide receiver wise, just a football player.
Yeah.
In the wide receiver spot that he's, I mean, he's so reliable. I mean, you know, everybody in the building knew where the ball was going the entire fourth quarter of the Houston game. You know what? He's going to make the play.
Right.
That's the guy that Michael Pittman Jr. is. And when you think about developing a young quarterback into the NFL, having a reliable weapon, it's so important.
That's the word that Chris Ballard used when I asked him at the NFL Combine, how does Anthony Richardson's skill set change how you evaluate guys you want to bring on the team, knowing what his skill set is, how different it is. And he said, you want to surround him with reliable players.
Yeah.
You want to build up front first and then surround him with reliable players. And to me, that was a nod that Richardson's own explosiveness kind of drives the rest of the offense. But for you got to have guys who can catch the ball, yeah. who can, like you said, Casey, everyone in the building knows Michael Pittman's getting the ball. He's going to get the first down
right.
on 3rd and 7. Those are the kind of players you want around Richardson. Now, you can go beyond that, but as a baseline, you want to make sure you've got a Michael Pittman in the building. It's something, you know, when we talked to Ben Solak, who's coming up here a little bit later on the podcast, he said the Colts don't want to figure out what life is like without Michael Pittman
right,
Jr.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely true. If you are a team that has a player like Michael Pittman and a quarterback on a rookie contract, you don't want to know what's behind door number 2.
Correct.
Official Colts podcast. Be sure to follow along the Colts Audio Network anywhere you can get your podcasts and everything. We were all busy down at the Combine last week, obviously with Shane Steichen speaking this morning and stuff. All your latest Colts information available on the Colts Audio Network and Colts.com. JJ, I want to start with you on this. A thing I spoke to Shane Steichen this morning as well for a minute. And my question, I didn't really get it out to him the way I wanted to, but how tough do you think it is for Shane Steichen? Offense, 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 right? We're going to throw to score. We're going to run to win. Offense, offense, offense. He goes into a draft, and now all of a sudden there's team needs on the other side of the ball. You know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. his offensive mind saying, boy, if I got that kid out of fill in the blank, or if I got that kid from fill out of blank, I'll average 4 for 40 a game. How tough is that for a second-year head coach to come in and say, hey, general manager, I have to work along with you. Obviously, there's some bells and whistles out there that I want on this roster, but you just can't do it. How tough is that for him?
Yeah, I think it's a mindset shift you have to make going from being a coordinator to a head coach, mm-hmm. where as offensive coordinator to the Eagles, you know, what happened on the defensive side of the ball didn't affect his job, essentially. Like, yes, it obviously affects the whole team,
right.
but, if the Eagles go out and when they traded for A.J. Brown, you know, instead of maybe taking a corner mm-hmm. in that spot, that obviously is great news for him. But, yeah, you have to have a full view of the team and know that, okay, we might have a need here on defense that's going to supersede this wide receiver who I really like or this tight end who I really like coming onto the team. But that's all part of being a head coach and managing the entire team, the entire building. I think the interesting thing, and Shane talked about in his press conference today, was he's being in year 2 now, where your head isn't spinning, trying to hire a coaching staff, trying to install an offense, and oh, by the way, trying to figure out who the heck your quarterback's going to be. Now, this year, you can kind of take that more global view, and I think this is really where you start seeing some programs build and build and build, is you get that baseline foundation set in year 1. Now Shane knows how to work with Chris Ballard a lot better than he did last year, which worked out pretty well at the draft picks the Colts had. But now you know, okay, this is kind of how Chris sees things. This is how I see things. We've gone through a whole season together. This is how, you know, Jim Bob Cooter sees things now that we've gone through a whole season working together with him as the OC. This is how Gus Bradley sees things as DC. And I think that really helps you build out your roster and put your players in the best position to succeed.
JJ Stankovic, Casey Vallier. I'm Jeffrey Gorman. And this thing about Alec Pierce is kind of what I want to get into of this roster. Casey, I'll start with you. In a good scenario, he's getting pushed in training camp at this point of his career. Is that an accurate statement as far as whoever that is, whether it's a free agent, whether it's a draft choice, he's getting pushed because we've established MPJ as number 1. Josh Downs is Josh Downs. He's a great slot receiver, and he's got so many different skills. But to both you guys, do you see Alec Pierce getting pushed as far as, not roster spots, but playing time from a receiver or two that we haven't talked about up to this point?
Yeah, I think the three of us here, I think we all kind of understand Alec Pierce now to a point from what his mental makeup is. And I think that is the kind of thing that's going to make him grow. I think part of he's had some up and downs, and mainly I think it's because of the quarterback ups and downs that he's dealt with in his 2 years here. And you kind of know what he is. But I think that's one of the things that's gonna just push him more. I would agree that I think you're gonna add depth all over the roster, and I'm sure this team looks offensively and looks outside of what Michael Pittman Jr. showed you. I think you probably will want more from a lot of positions, but you're talking about wide receiver, you're gonna want more. So I think you're going to address a need. You're gonna try and make Alec Pierce better. You're gonna try to make Josh Downs better. So I think absolutely you're going to see him challenged. But I think that's kind of what Alec Pierce is probably going to want to see.
Here's something that this is the state of the NFL today. There's no patience. if you don't have a 1,000-yard season in your first 2 years in the league, you're a bust. You're out. You know, Reggie Wayne didn't have a 1,000-yard season until 4 years into the NFL.
Now, on the flip side, he was on the other side of him was a Hall of Famer.
Correct. Right. You know. But on the other side of Alec Pierce is not Marvin Harrison,
but a
pretty good player in Michael Pittman. Sometimes you got to have patience. Development is not always linear. Alec, I thought, had a really promising 2022. Production tailed a little bit last year, but sometimes guys' development curves go up and down and up and down until they finally start really going up, or you look at the trend line over 5 years, and it's pointing up. But having said that, I think the thing that accelerates this is you have Anthony Richardson,
right.
And you do need to surround him with guys, like we said, who are reliable, who you can say, if we need a play right here, you can go to him. I think Josh Downs looked like a guy who could do that last year, but he also, same thing, you got to have his development curve continue to go up. It's kind of this long-winded way of saying Alec may get pushed this year, but don't be surprised if seemingly out of nowhere, Alec Pierce has a great year.
Yeah.
Because he's a kid who we know how hard he works. We know the talent level that he has. If he figures some stuff out about his game this offseason, the talent, the work ethic, they're both there. Coaching staff still likes him. Sometimes it doesn't happen right at once, and we lose patience with guys because you got to be great within 2 years or you stink. That's not always true.
He's more than an over-the-top guy.
Right. Yeah. I also really like what JJ just said, too, with the coaching staff. I mean, it didn't matter how many different times the local media would ask a question about where is Alec Pierce. This staff glowed about what Alec did, even when he wasn't. Let's say he's not in a certain play. It's everything else that he does. I mean, you look at the snap counts. There's a reason Alec Pierce played so many snaps last year. It was because when you talk about reliability, they could count on him to be that guy. Now, I'm sure when you look at production of receptions and all that, you want to see that develop as well. But I think from what this coaching staff sees in Alec Pierce, they really love what they have.
Let me just throw one other thing out here about this, you know, lack of patience. And this is not a direct comparison that I'm trying to make, but I'm trying to point out sometimes this happens. This wide receiver in 2021, 2022, his two first years in the league, 33 catches, 446 yards. Then 37 catches, 481 yards. Last year, 80 catches, 1,297 yards, 8 touchdowns. That's Nico Collins, the wide receiver for the Texans.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
Sometimes, killer. But I mean, and you can look at circumstance, right? Okay, Houston's quarterback situation those first 2 years, pretty bad.
Yep.
Got a good quarterback in there in C.J. Stroud. All of a sudden, bam, he takes off. Alec Pierce is a guy who we know the best thing he does, and that's win 50-50 balls downfield. The Colts haven't had a quarterback who can consistently do that. All of a sudden, you maybe get a full season out of Anthony. Right. All of a sudden, you're looking at Alec, and you're like, man, he's having a good year, just based on circumstance. That these things happen. So don't lose patience with Alec. Yes, you probably want to bring in some competition, but the Colts are not giving up on this guy.
Right.
And sometimes it happens in year three or year four.
That's why he's here. Stuff like that. Great poll right there. Nico Collins, a good, you know, somebody to compare with like that. And all of a sudden having a breakout year. Still trying to figure out why you're here, Case. But we're going to get
Me
there.
Me too.
We're
going
to get there.
Yeesh.
No. Hey, I'm just teasing. Hey, we were down at the NFL Combine all last week. Everybody here, Matt Taylor, Lara Overton included, talking to everybody. And one of the best interviews that we had last week was with Ben Solek from The Ringer, talking about the upcoming draft with the Colts and talking about the upcoming 2024 season with the Colts, and these two gentlemen sat down. Here's Ben Solek.
Joining us here on the Colts Audio Network, I'm JJ Stankovitz with Casey Vallier, and we have Benjamin Solek, NFL staff writer from The Ringer. You can listen to him on the Ringer NFL show on Spotify, and a guy who was recently named by Peter King as one of the best young journalists in the NFL. I'm sure you've got that a lot this week, Ben.
It's cool. No, cool from Peter. I appreciate it. He's the man. Peter's Mount Rushmore, so it was pretty sick.
So we're here at the NFL Combine talking draft, talking Colts, but there's one thing that I want to talk to you about and start here with Anthony Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote this 2 years ago on The Ringer, and it was actually in relation to the Colts turning to Sam Ehlinger for Matt Ryan. And it was about a quarterback's ability to avoid sacks and the EPA, expected points added, you generate by just not taking a sack. And you showed that basically if you can just throw the ball away, it's a significantly better play than obviously taking a sack, and you bet a graph and everything. It's like seared into my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Anthony Richardson, who is one of the best quarterbacks, his profile in college was this, and he showed to be this in the NFL, one of the best quarterbacks at taking pressure and not getting sacked on that pressure. What is Anthony Richardson's upside and maybe baseline as someone who is very skilled at feeling pressure, not taking a sack, and then either scrambling, which is an incredibly efficient play, or just throwing the ball away as a quarterback.
So the ceiling floor question is really important, because when we talk about mobile quarterbacks, we're very frequently talking about them by the framework of their ceiling, all dual threat, and they create. But the reality of mobile quarterbacks is that they're high floor. That's why they're valuable. And it goes back to what you talked about. When you have mobility, you're able to remove negative plays. You take sacks out of the equation, you're able to get away from those. And you get to throwaways, you get to scrambles, you get to dump offs. But your ability to negate pressure by having movement in the pocket, that raises the floor, right? The mobility of quarterbacks doesn't create as many big plays as much as it eliminates the negative ones. So floor-wise, Richardson should be a starter in the league as long as he can stay healthy. I think that you've seen that level of talent from him. You know that model is successful. You saw flashes of that when he was healthy this year. Ceiling-wise, he can be a top 10 quarterback, and I expect him, if he stays healthy, to become that, because the coaching staff there is so good. They have a solid set of weapons for him right now, and he's got his head screwed on straight. You brought up the college numbers. I loved Richardson coming out, and people would talk about him as a project, and I thought that was I thought he was far closer to the finished product than a project than a lot of people realize. And the number one thing was the pocket mobility and the pocket management. He was so good at Florida at, okay, take a little half step up this way, move a step that way, get across my body, get the ball to a back. Like, we see a lot of mobile quarterbacks. Jaden Daniels out of LSU this year, a great example of a guy who just, when there's pressure, he just drops his eyes, tucks the ball, and runs. And he's a great athlete, so go for it. Richardson, who could have been that, right? Richardson, who could have been, I'm 4'4", I'm enormous, here we go, tucking this ball and running. He would decide to find checkdowns. He would decide to stay in the pocket, manage space, and find a throw. It is such a good sign for his processing, for his mental ability. I have a world of faith in Anthony Richardson. Just please, young man, stop taking so many hits. Stay healthy.
So with all that said, do you think that, I mean, I know from our perspective, I think we all saw what Anthony can be, but, you know, we talked about the limited time at Florida, the limited time here he's gotten in his rookie season. Do you think there's enough there to just go ahead and know, all right, this is the guy?
No, because it's not happened yet, but I will say it by week three next year. You know, say, okay. You know, like,
I've seen it now.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's very clearly there. You need the guy to be able to stay on the field, right? Like, there's a million different ways to fail in the league and to bust in the league, and one of the ways is just to not stay healthy, right? And that, I think, is right now your biggest question for Richardson, is just, if you're going to play this style where you built like a linebacker and you hit like a linebacker, are you going to be able to withstand, you know, the level of contact? You have to learn how to protect yourself, right? Jalen Hurts from 2022 into 2023, just sliding a lot more and stepping out of bounds a lot more. And that hurt the Eagles' offense, right? There's a cost-benefit here. You have to try to find a happy medium. But with, again, like with the coaching staff they've got, with Shane down at Jim Bob Cooter and Cam Turner, quarterbacks coach, with the way that they've thought about developing him, I was there in camp last year, and you could tell they're like, oh,
right.
Yeah, okay, here we go. And then you see it on the field for a few games, and then you lose it. So there's a lot of, you know, alternate universes, twilight zones, where, you know, it's C.J. Stroud or it's Bryce Young who goes down with that shoulder injury, and Richardson stays healthy for 17 games, and we're talking about a playoff run for the Colts that, like, you know, lasts a couple weeks.
And that's one thing I want to kind of go to, because in the NFL, you always see teams go from last to first. I mean, we're looking in the AFC South at what Houston did just 1 year. You add your quarterback in there. So with the Colts now, yeah, he might be still a project in a way because he just doesn't have the sample size out there, but are the Colts in more of a win-now mode, in your opinion, where, you know what, the division is there to be taken, because ultimately Houston is still a young team just like Indianapolis? Yes.
They should be aggressive in trying to win in this window, because it's the rookie contract quarterback window.
Right.
This is when it's easiest. This is when you have the money. And they have good young players, and I think one of my big questions coming in was kind of offensive line, and I thought that Q, kind of coming off his foot injury, wasn't as good as he had been in the past. I thought he took a nice step back this year. Bernard Raymond took a big step forward. Like, the offensive line was one of the big questions for me coming into the season, and I think that by the end of the year, you checked a lot of those boxes, right? You feel like good about that. Okay, like, I think Josh Downs was kind of like what you wanted to see from him. And then defensively, man, like, I mean, they were scraping it together kind of with youth and with injury, but high sack production, and the secondary kind of settled into a decent spot. Like, they had a formula last year where it was good enough that Gardner Minshew, as backup quarterback, right, solid backup, is it your team that's over 500, your team that's pushing for the postseason. So if you took a healthy Richardson and dropped him into just that environment, then, you know, there would have been clearly enough to see last year. It's like, all right, Colts should be aggressive, Colts should win now. It's a little bit more tenuous because he's coming off the injury, and you don't know if you're going to get 8 sacks from every single defensive player.
Right.
So, you know, that's the tough thing about the NFL. We like to think development is linear. We like to think that what happened last year is going to stay, and it doesn't. But they should, in my opinion, have enough data off of last year and the performance of some of the ancillary pieces to say we should be aggressive in Richardson's window.
Benjamin Solak from The Ringer is our guest. All right, so if you're a Colts fan, or you're somebody who wants the Colts to do well, Give me a win now move, that aggressive move, like your dream scenario.
Yeah.
Knowing the NFL landscape the way you do, knowing how the Colts are positioned the way you do, what's that dream scenario move? Just like one move that the Colts could potentially make.
Go to L'Jarius Sneed's agent with a blank check and tell him whatever, however many zeros you want in this check, and go for it. Right, I think that you had flashes from Juju Brents and you had flashes from Jan Jones and Dallas
Flowers. Yeah. Went to Oak Park River Forest High School, my alma mater.
His name always throws me because he doesn't spell it like Dallas.
Right.
So I think I'm pronouncing it wrong. You had moments with these young guys, but corner is a position, man, where you'll have flashes and then a guy will lose his confidence. It's such a mercurial spot. Mm-hmm. If you can get like a kind of known commodity all in the free agent market, and L'Jarius Sneed is like known to be one of the top press man corners in the league, period. If you can do that, that allows you to just stop thinking about half the field and just only pay attention to the other half, and that's such a huge relief. And I think Gus Bradley likes to let his corners live. You know what I'm saying? Like he'll put a deep safety back there and say, you got to handle your third, you got to handle your half of the field, you got to handle your man. And so, to me, if they had a lot more stability at corner and they had a veteran that I really trusted to at least get his half of the job done, I feel a lot better about the youth in their room and the floor of that defense.
Tell me about the wide receiver market. I remember having this conversation with Robert Mays from The Athletic during training camp where he just sort of all the wide receiver movement is almost done. Mm-hmm. You had A.J. Brown move, you had Devontae Adams, you had Tyreek Hill move, but a lot of those guys who are coming up on their second, third contracts have found their spots.
Yeah.
Is this a year where that maybe resets and there's more movement at wide receiver, or is it hey, we got player X, there is no shot we're giving him up, and we're going to try to find a way to keep him here long term?
I think once the cap ballooned the way it did this year, and you saw there's a lot more space than teams expected, $255 million I think is the mm-hmm. figure now, I think you'll see a lot of that money go to securing wide receiver deals. Mm-hmm. The Colts don't want to find out what life is like without Michael Pittman, right? He's been the guy for the last few years. Bengals with T. Higgins. They put him on the tag. I think that they'd trade him for a Godfather package, but they don't want to move off of him. There's no reason to. You look at the teams that have been successful, deep postseason runs the last couple of years, you got to have two pass catchers or Patrick Mahomes. That doesn't count. Other than that, you got to have two pass catchers. You got to have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. You got to have Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. You got to have Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle. You have to have multiple guys here. And so for a lot of these top names in the wide receiver market, Calvin Ridley with the Jaguars, Pittman, Higgins, I don't think you want to find out what life is like losing that guy. So if you have a few extra million in the piggy bank you didn't expect to have, I'd be putting that on the wide receiver contract to secure him. So I don't think we see a lot of top-tier wide receiver movement this year.
Now, with you talk about the contracts with wide receivers, we heard it from Chris Ballard. It's kind of like the price of gas. You pay it because that's what it is.
Yeah.
And do you envision kind of the league kind of just following that same sentiment? Is that that's what the price of playing right now is, because it is such a pass-heavy league. And you just kind of – you mentioned with a guy like Michael Pittman, you just pay it because you got to.
Yeah, it's a – I think the answer is yes. I expect this to continue happening. It's a little bit of a bubble in a market, right? Okay, we can all acknowledge that this isn't – this is inflated. This is a lot of money, but what are you going to do? You're going to not – you got to have wide receivers. And you used to need two of them. Now you need three of them, right? You're going to put three guys out in the field, and you're going to rotate these guys. You have to have young guys in the hopper. And so it's true that there's a ton of wide receiver talent in the draft, and there's a ton of wide receiver talent in every draft. It's going to be the case for forever. So many more guys are playing the position, so many more different body types. College teams are so much better at throwing the ball than they used to. There's always going to be a wide receiver to draft. You should leave every year with a third-round pick. Just go get a guy, see, big guy, fast guy, small guy, who can do something? but that's because there's just such a demand for good pass catchers. And again, bringing up Richardson and his development, it is impossible to bring along a young quarterback without good pass catchers. Cannot be done. And so you got to fill the hopper with them. And so I think the league's going to keep paying for them. I think they're going to keep drafting them, and they're going to do that for a while. And then at some point, this bubble will burst. Somebody else's job to figure out when, not me. That's what GMs get paid for.
Benjamin, you're someone who I really enjoy the way you think about the league. The hot read column you do on The Ringer is really good. The stuff
Thanks,
you
man.
Do for The Ringer NFL show is really good. What is something that is kind of entrenched in NFL groupthink mm-hmm. that makes you feel like you're taking crazy pills?
Oh, there's an interesting question. I'll say this. I don't mean it, but I'll say it. I think that pass rush is very overrated. I think that I think Gus as example, Gus four down rush, and this is how we live, and this is how we go for. I think that the teams that live by a four down rush, the good offensive coach in the leagues have figured out how to kill you on that, right? They figured out, okay, if you're going to put four down every single play, we know how to work around this. We know how to find the gaps in the running game. We know how to manipulate your edge rushers, right? When you run into these Shanahans and these Matt LaFleurs, right, they can circle your top edge rusher and say, we're going to run reverses and counters and pulls and sweeps and everything. We're never going to even block this guy. We're just going to make his life a headache. We're going to pull him this way and that way and everything. I think that you have to be a lot more multiple in your fronts, and that's hard to do, because when you choose that, when you say, okay, we're going to be multiple, we're going to put five guys down and four guys down and use college fronts and change the perspectives, what you're saying, what you're accepting is, I can't just let my four down dudes get off the ball one gap and go. Now, anybody listening is screaming, hey, Jim Schwartz and the Browns are the best defense in the league this year. Hey, you know, Kwity Paye at 8.5 sacks, Dewade Egbo, Sam Tabakom. And you're absolutely right. It's just that defense can be so good for you for the first 17 weeks of the year. And then you get to the postseason, you run into a good offensive coach, and he waxes you for four quarters. And so to me, like, the league loves, and defense coaches love to be like, put our four down, we're one gap aggressive upfield, and we're going to disrupt. And it's like, yeah, like, it beats 25 of the 32 teams, but eventually you're going to run one of the seven, and then they're gonna take you for a ride. And so I'm very big right now on, like, you know, Mike McDonald nonsense and Brian Flores nonsense. Do weird stuff up front. You have to be able to create chaos. You have to be able to fool one of these elite coaches for long enough to steal a win from them.
All right. Well, Ben, thanks for joining us here on the Colts Audio Network. We'll keep reading and listening to you over at The Ringer.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Gentlemen, great stuff with Ben Solek. Thank you, sir, from The Ringer, talking about what we're looking forward to in this draft and the upcoming 2024 season. That was kind of fun down at the Combine. I mean, we didn't exactly eat like kings, but you did a couple of nights. We were there
one night.
Over at a nice establishment, maybe Prime or St. Elmo's or something. Tell me about that again. I love this, so please preach to the heavens on this. You do this every Combine.
Yeah, every Combine, my friends who I used to cover the Bears with, we all get together for the it's the Jeff Dickerson Memorial Dinner.
Yeah.
It's Jeff Dickerson, the former ESPN Bears reporter, did it forever. Passed away from colon cancer 2 years ago. But every year at the Combine, JD would get all the Bears media together. And we get a big table at St. Elmo's. We get a bunch of wine and we get steak. And we would just have a great time. And we wouldn't really talk about, you know, the Bears or our jobs. It was just, you know, let's hang out, have some fun. We're all away from our families. So we, you know, do that every year. I'm glad I still get an invite, even though I'm no longer on the Bears beat. But yeah, I had a blast doing that. Jeff Joniak, the Bears play-by-play announcer, was just holding court the whole time, telling stories. Yeah, had a really great night. And then wound up at Prime, which was, you know, late night Prime at the NFL Combine. For anyone who doesn't know.
The who's who, really, sometimes. Did you see some faces there?
I walk in there, and I saw Allen Robinson.
Nice,
Hadn't seen A-Rob in about 5 years. Said hi to him. he was doing some stuff for SiriusXM, so he was in town. Just missed John Fox at Prime, apparently.
Former Colts coach.
Yep. Uh-huh. But for people who don't know, if you've never been out on a Wednesday of the NFL Combine at Prime 47 downtown, when they're done with dinner service, so about 10 o'clock probably, all the tables go away. And it just turns into a standing room only, shoulder-to-shoulder bar.
Really?
Full of NFL media, coaches, scouts, executives, apparently players like Allen Robinson. And it is a great time. You nurse that light beer. I had about half a Coors Light.
Sure you did.
That's correct. I had about half a Coors Light.
I saw you the next morning. You were soaked. So I don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, that was before I got to Prime.
I'm teasing.
But it's a good time. It's always good, you know, catching up with friends.
Absolutely.
The thing with the NFL Combine, too, that I love is, you know, we're in Radio Row, which is right by where the podiums are, the player podiums. And then the media room is... it's like a 1,000-step walk away. And then the Starbucks at the JW is another like 1,500 steps. So on those walks, I'll say, hey, I'm going to go get a coffee. You want anything? I'll be back 45 minutes later because I ran into three people in the hallway who I had a chat with. You know, all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, what are the Bears doing with Justin Fields? Or, you know, how are things going with the Eagles? Or, you know, what's going on with the Titans? Like, you just get these conversations. You learn a lot from... not just the Radio Row interviews, but from just the conversations you have in the hallway at the Indiana Convention Center.
Well done to you. Hats off to Jeff Dickerson, a young man who was great at his job and left us too soon. Great tradition that you guys are doing at the Combine. Casey, here's what I loved about the Combine. Watching you hold court a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Because, you know, next to us was the Steelers. We had the Jags around us. The Titans are right there. The Jets are and Raiders are behind us and stuff. But what I liked about it is all the personnel from each team, ours included, we all put our general manager hats on. Every person in that thing, everybody had a GM hat on saying, well, this offseason, yeah, we're going to try and re-sign fill in the blank. We're going to try and draft fill in the blank. That's what I love about it is there's just so much ball being talked about for a solid 8 hours a day. I kind of miss that stuff. We get a little bit here, but to hear the other teams and stuff and making friends with them, it really is a special, you know, a week of doing that and finding out about the people you don't really see other than once a year. It's really great.
You know, you mentioned that. The thing that I mean, I enjoy all of that, but one of the things I also like is, you know, it's kind of like a family. Mm. Like this is like you're seeing, it's like a family reunion. All of a sudden you got your extended cousins and everybody. Like, you know, Matt Taylor, the voice of the Colts, he does a podcast every year at the Combine with all of the AFC South play-by-play guys, and they're all friends. So it's like, yeah, you go in and your enemy's on the field, but I love that there's still that, you know, human nature to the Combine. You know, and that's what JJ's talking about with the networking. You get to know these people. And it's funny because you can almost relate to what they're dealing with here this year and then what they're doing. And everybody has similar stories. And I love when you talk about the GM hat because it always makes me show that if I ever was a GM, I would last maybe 35 seconds and I would be fired because I'd be that poor at the job. But it is fun. The Combine, it's a really, really fun week. I love that it's here. It should never move, but I do enjoy it a lot.
Can I give you a real quick story from this year's Combine?
Here we go.
You know, you're walking around, you're seeing people, and the first question that pops out of your mouth is, hey, how's the off season going? So that's just kind of like, that's the reflexive thing I do when I see someone. So I'm in line at Starbucks, and I run into George McCaskey, chairman of the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
And I reflexively, so how's the off season going? Like, that's how, and he goes, well, pretty quiet on the football front, pretty quiet on the business front. And just, George is the best. He's great. And, you know, I just was like, sorry, you know. And ask about his mom, you know, how Virginia's doing. She's 101.
Man.
Yeah, that was one of those moments in the Combine where, like, hey, I probably should phase that question a little bit better.
All right, guys. A big, not question, but a big thing that the other personnel from other teams were coming up and talking to us about. Case, I'll start with you. The takeaway you got from the landscape of the NFL talking about Anthony Richardson and this Colts offense.
You know, it's funny because I went away from the season feeling very similar to the way that everybody else felt. I mean, you talk to former GMs, like we had Mike Tannenbaum on, and I remember he was one of the guys last year pretty adamant about, I don't think you take Anthony Richardson this high, and if you do, he needs to sit. His tone changed a little bit. He thought it was a good thing that Anthony, not because of the injury, was able to learn. He said, but those four games, he was electric. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to see that you can change guys' minds. I mean, there were some guys that we were talking to who said, I had Anthony as the number one quarterback, and I think if you'd have saw all 17 games, you would have seen that he was the guy. So I went away from the 23 season going, I think we have some real promise in Richardson, and then it was validated by hearing some of the other bigwigs around the NFL talking about, man, this guy was, he was a lot, there was a lot more that they saw out of him than they expected. I think a lot of people thought he's going to need to grow this, he's not going to be able to be an accurate passer and all this, and I think you saw it all come to fruition. So seeing the NFL, you know, world kind of viewing it and taking it in the same way I felt, it was cool because I felt validated in my, you know, kind of affinity of what we saw out of Anthony Richardson in that small sample size.
Yeah, sometimes you feel like you're a little too close to the fire.
100%,
right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, we saw these four games. They were amazing.
Right.
And then you go and you talk to, like we did with Ben Solak, or you hear from other national folks, or Chris Trapasso told us that, you know, he thought Anthony was probably the best quarterback in last year's draft.
Yeah.
Like, you know, okay. And then you're seeing that validation from, hey, these people are not here in Indianapolis. They're not, you know, hearing all the stuff we're hearing about Anthony every single day, and we're not, you know, they're kind of viewing it from more of a national perspective. And to hear that, absolutely, that validated how I feel about the guy.
And I know we're really close to it, but I mean, people mentioning the Rams game, and it's like they remembered a game,
right,
from, you know, maybe not a team they cover on a daily basis, but that's what the impression was, he said. I mean, we all remember the way that first half to second half flop was there in against the Rams, where Anthony Richardson, I'm not saying he put the team on his back, but he darn near put the team on the back and almost led him to a victory. And other people, they highlighted that game. Like, I remember what he did against the Rams, and it was like, wow, I mean, that's a game in, was it week 4? Yeah, week 4, yeah, in an NFL season where, you know, there's thousands of games that happen and they can pinpoint it. So it was, I mean, you talk about the validation. That was really, really cool.
You know what else got validated for me last week at the Combine was people just matter-of-factly being like, you got a really good head coach.
Yes.
Like,
oh, man.
You ask around and it's like, oh, man. You got a really, like, Ben Solak, when we were done with him, he's a Philly guy. He gets up and he goes, hey, can we have Shane back? Like, uh-huh. And we didn't ask him about Shane, but he talked to us for another 5 minutes about how much he thinks highly of Shane Steichen, you know, as a schemer. But I think, you know, those guys, what they see is the you know, putting your players in the best position to succeed aspect of Shane. And I think what we see here is the way that he commands the building, the leadership aspect of it. And I think those two things married together make him a really, really promising head coach in this league.
JJ, give us a little bit of the upcoming NFL calendar, what these fans can look forward to.
All right, so today was the deadline for the franchise tag.
Sure.
So that's kind of the first like big marker in the NFL offseason. On Monday at noon, that begins the quote-unquote legal tampering window. It's called the negotiating window.
Well,
so between Monday at noon and Wednesday at 3:59 p.m., contracts can be agreed to. They cannot be signed unless you're signing with the team that you played for the
year
prior.
But it has to be Monday. Wink, wink. Uh-huh. I mean, come on. Come on.
Well, okay.
This is just the legal part.
There's agents talking to teams and stuff. a week before, that has to be out there. I think it's just kind of the thing that the NFL might look the other way a little bit.
Well,
no?
Players know what their market is.
Gotcha.
Players know what their market is.
Well said.
But so the other part of that, too, is trades cannot be executed before 3:59 on Wednesday.
Mm. Correct.
Once 4 o'clock hits on Wednesday, if you have signed with a different team as an unrestricted free agent, then you can execute that deal. So you remember a couple years ago how it was when I started, 2021.
With Carson.
And you guys did all those bits on the podcast about like, this thing's happening. You know what it is.
Yeah,
we can't talk about it. And then as soon as 4 o'clock on on that Wednesday hit, you could do, hey, Carson Wentz, welcome to Indianapolis. That's what this period is, at least for us, our purposes as the team podcast. But it's going to be a busy week. The free agency frenzy is like every year something happens and your jaw drops.
Yep.
Like that, really? That player went there. That player got traded there. That they let that player go. It's going to be a real interesting week.
And I also think that since the legal tampering window has been executed by the NFL, I feel like there's always a head scratcher there where something is agreed upon on a Monday, but then by Wednesday, things have changed. Mm-hmm. So that's always one thing to also watch, too.
It's, you got to remember
it's not necessarily set in stone on Monday because that's not when they can actually sign it. So it is fun. I enjoy the free agency frenzy. You know, and typically, you know, it's one of those where, as Chris Ballard talks about, your A guys are either getting re-signed or getting tagged. So the amount of money that the B guys are making, it's always eye-popping. So I'm always anxious to see
and
that.
And $30 more million
yes,
added
sir.
To the salary cap per team. So that opens up a lot. I want to end on a strong note. We've seen a couple of things out of Anthony Richardson, JJ. We saw him throwing the football on a field. Mm-hmm. I believe he was barefoot, though, out there, having a good time. No problem, as long as he's throwing the ball. And he got married recently. Is that correct? Or he had engaged.
He got engaged,
recently. What is a timeline look from what you've heard from the powers that be up front with Chris Ballard, Jim Irsay, and Shane Steichen as far as where he's going to be when OTAs come around? Where is he at when training camp opens?
So they haven't set a timeline on OTAs, training camp, anything like that. Chris Ballard was pretty strong at the combine saying, like, Anthony wants to be ahead of schedule, right? Like, he wants to, I want to hit this milestone. And he's like, it's our job to kind of pull the reins back a little bit. And he, you know, Chris Ballard is speaking from an informed experience. Same with Jim Irsay, that, you know, they went through this with Andrew Luck. You don't need to be ahead of schedule, especially when we're talking about it's March.
Right.
You want to make sure you're following the doctor's advice. But it is definitely encouraging that Anthony Richardson is throwing. You know, Chris Ballard said that, you know, he's got a good team around him to work with down when he is in Florida throwing or whether he's back up here in Indianapolis. It all sounds very encouraging for Anthony Richardson. No indication has been given of when he'll, you know, be back out there on the field ripping the ball around, but it's all very positive right now.
All right, guys, that's it. Let's close this thing out on the right effort, if you will. It's spring training time. Baseball is all around.
The people love when we talk baseball.
But I'm just putting there's a reason.
Okay, where are we going here?
The reason you didn't go at the next level as a left-handed pitcher is
I don't throw hard at all.
Don't have the arm strength.
But you did have a nasty curve.
You said.
I got a decent yakker.
Okay,
you know I can drop an Uncle Charlie on you.
I'm just saying.
My favorite thing to do when I was playing, you know, in high school or you know I played in like an intramural league in college.
Sure.
You get a left-handed batter, and I would aim the curveball at the guy's head.
Ah.
And then you drop that thing into strike zone. You get him to kind of turn their shoulder a little bit. Feels great. Also, when you throw 68 miles an hour.
Yeah, but
if you get someone to be late on a 68-mile-an-hour fastball,
But just think about it. You were that close to being playing at the in the show.
Oh,
just,
well, so
from
close.
68 to 98, I'm saying it is a 30-mile difference. But
yeah, that's pretty
you were
significant.
Closer than some people. And Casey, we know your ball career, middle infielder, hit third because your
Casey
dad was the manager.
Casey actually played in college.
I did. I played in college.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean,
you didn't like your dad was the manager, so you hit third?
No, it's funny. You know, I'm glad you bring that up because my dad actually did coach me one time.
Okay.
And he said, I will never do it again.
Love it.
Because, A, he's way too critical. And all of that, and I mean, I was probably one of my worst summers that I ever had with my dad coaching because I was, you know, near the end of the lineup.
Right.
I was not, I didn't get the dad treatment. It
gotcha.
Was more of the non treatment. If
you are
you
will. Who you are, though, okay.
Exactly. I have, by the way, moved into t-ball coaching.
That a boy.
My
love
first
it.
Year coaching t-ball. 4-year-old t-ball.
I did it two straight summers, and I took the summer off.
Good job.
I can't do it. I want to just watch as a fan. So enjoy.
Enjoy it. I cannot wait. To get these kids running PFP drills.
Let's go.
That's all it's about.
Get some sweat
we're going to, you know, like learn how to slide head first.
You're right.
Show
hey,
them those Pete Rose videos.
Take them out of the play. We want
you know,
to be a champion.
Spikes up. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Make sure
we're going to be the dirt ball team. In our none of this is true, by the way.
Right.
Just for the record,
I love it.
It's 4-year-old T-ball. If they run to the right base,
That's
a huge accomplishment.
That's what I was going to tell you. Please, after your first practice, let me know how it goes because you go in with a plan. Like, all right, we're going to throw for X, just play catch, and then we're going to hit some off the tee for 25 minutes and then figure out what that first 25 minutes, it doesn't all go at all planned, so you just,
okay,
whatever. Here's what we're going to do.
Here's my one goal for being a T-ball coach.
Okay.
Bat safety.
There you go.
I love that. That's a great one.
We are teaching safety with a bat because it is a metal bat. We got for T-ball. This isn't your Fisher Price
plastic.
Watch
your swings. Yeah, watch your
swings. You got to watch what you're doing with that thing.
That's
here, I'll
so that's going to be the big thing.
You got to remember to let them know they have to drop the bat to run to first base.
That's right.
Well,
never thought I'd have to explain that one, but that is a difficulty.
We're going
to
work on our bat flips too.
Yeah.
Jose Bautista against the Rangers.
Hey.
Bam.
All right.
We're going to get get some Lorenzo Cain bat flips in there. We're going to get Brett Boone. You remember he had a great bat
Brett
flip?
Boone sure. had a great bat. I was going to bring him up,
yeah.
But yeah, okay, I like that.
All right, we're losing a few on these
that's absolutely
bat flips
true.
Right now.
Yeah. If you got your favorite bat flip, toss it in here.
Write us in. Guys, in Central Indiana, two of the top T-ball coaches, we've got them right here on the couch. Right? But you know what? They happen to know a little bit about football as well. The official Colts podcast, J.J. Stankovic, Casey Valliam, Jeffrey Gorman, Lara Overton will return. Guys, I appreciate you letting me pick your brain, getting us ready for the upcoming, obviously, franchise tag ending with Michael Pittman Jr. and the big free agency period coming up.
Big week next week here on the Colts Audio Network. Monday morning, Sunday night into Monday morning, we'll have our free agency preview.
You heard it.
It'll be myself, Casey Valliere, Matt Taylor doing that. That'll be available on YouTube as well on our Overtime channel, and then we'll have the official podcast Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then we got those Overtime episodes, which are just like our emergency break glass in case of podcast.
Those are all over the board. We're going to have a couple of
those.
We're
going to be having a couple
of those. Get your voices ready, guys.
Yep. Yep.
Good
absolutely.
Job. Hey, it's loaded. If you're a Colts fan, again, Colts.com, the Colts Radio, the Colts Audio Network. We've got a ton of stuff going on. And you guys, all kidding aside, you worked your tails off on the free agency stuff, both of you guys.
Thank you.
And what the Colts possibly could bring to this roster. So well done. All available, like I said, again, on the Colts Audio Network. For J.J. Stankovic and Casey Valliere, I'm Jeffrey Gorman. As always, go Colts. We'll see you next Tuesday.